This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Welcome in to White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I am Connor McKnight, big voice guy said so. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number this morning. Thanks for waking up with us. I mean, you've probably been up for a little while after all. It is a gorgeous, if very warm day in the city of Chicago. The White Sox are in Detroit to play the Tigers. I've got the lineups. We've got the pitching matchup. We'll get you all set for that ball game. We'll revisit last night's loss just a little bit. Another heartbreaker for the White Sox. Another one-run loss to the Tigers. Each and every of the four games against the Tigers this season have been a defeat of one run. Remember, opening day was a 1-0 affair. Boy, you think all the way back to that, when the start by Garrett Crochet was a surprise more than anything else, and now it just seems like every time out he turns in at least a quality start, and if not, you know, well, it's been a long time since it hasn't been a quality start for Garrett Crochet with a double-digit strikeouts and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, that was then, and this is now. The conversation around Garrett Crochet and Luis Robert Jr. and most of the rest of this roster has changed quite a bit and focused a whole ton on the coming deadline. We are just over a month away from Major League Baseball's trade deadline. That's coming up on July 30th. We'll talk a lot about where the White Sox are situated as it regards the deadline here in this show. It's time to start getting ready. It's time to start having those conversations pretty openly and pretty outwardly, whether it's here on White Sox Weekly or in any other place that you find people talking about the White Sox. Let's see, what else do we have to get to today? Oh, White Sox general manager Chris Getz spoke to reporters just a couple of days ago, so it's fresh tape, and we'll bring it to you a little bit. Double-A manager Sergio Santos had some press availability earlier this week, and we'll bring you some of the choicier cuts of that filet a little bit later on in the morning. Sergio's an interesting guy, and really one of the first players that I remember when I was a reporter covering the White Sox back in the day, one of the first players I can remember that was really open and kind of generous with his time and ready to talk about how he had become from a shortstop to a closer and the pitch mix he was working with. And I remember sitting down with Sergio Santos in front of his locker for the better part of 10 minutes just because I was curious about it. I wanted to see the slider grip. I wanted to know that, you know, how he had gotten to the pitch arsenal that he had, how he had become a lockdown closer for that brief moment in time with the White Sox after having been, you know, kind of a double-A shortstop that didn't quite make it. And Santos has got a great reputation now as a minor league manager, having come over from the Yankee system and back into the Sox fold of things, now managing the Birmingham Barons, who are off to, if not the best start in minor league baseball, and I don't mean just by a wins and loss record, but I mean by the actual production and dominance of a lot of the players at a particular level and for a particular team. The Birmingham Barons are that team in all of minor league baseball this year with just a couple of challengers. So we'll hear from Sergio in a little while as well. Let's get into last night just a bit. Obviously, a loss for the White Sox, one in which the only run of the game came on a Tommy Pham home run, a line drive laser out to left. It was, this thing was low and it was moving. Another one for Pham. He had a 2-for-4 day. Pham is in right field today for the White Sox and leading off again. Tommy's been kind of ensconced in that top spot when he's been in the lineup, and that's been often for the White Sox since they signed him and got him up to the bigs. Otherwise, offensively, not a lot going for the White Sox. Jack Flaherty was good. A.J. Hinch went to the bullpen at the right time, just when his starter, Flaherty, had started to lose it a little bit. A lack of walks for the White Sox offense. What else is new? Kind of plagued the approach from the White Sox yesterday. And then, of course, ball game ends with a mistake, you know, with a bad base running play. There's no other way to put it. This is a mental mistake, the likes of which you cannot have. And sure, the White Sox are facing a tough closer in Jason Foley, but they got the tying run on first base after Paul DeJong was hit by a pitch. And then Andrew Benintendi, in a pinch hit appearance, takes swings for Corey Lee and lines out to center field. And unfortunately for the White Sox and for Paul DeJong, he forgot how many outs there were. He was well around second base and maybe, you know, a step or two to third before he realized his error. The Tigers had very little to do than just throw it back in and create the double play, or complete the double play, I guess, and end the ball game. We played Paul DeJong's postgame comments in the postgame show last night, but you know, it being a Friday, a beautiful night here out in Chicago, I would imagine that some probably missed it. And I think what's key here, and while it is unfortunate and it sucks to have to talk about in any fashion, on any team, in any win and loss record, in any month of the calendar, it's going to happen every now and again. But what's important, I think, is that when these kinds of things happen, if they happen, the player is able to stand up and accept the consequences of it and realize, you know, what happened here and that it can't happen again. And for his part, DeJong, a veteran shortstop, a guy who came up with the Cardinals, who understands at the very least, you know, that culture of relative accountability and standards and expectations, right? You think about when DeJong came up with the Cardinals and what that organization was all about in those years. DeJong understands that, right? He's a guy who has absolutely come up in a culture that has preached and has held their players to that same level of accountability, much like the White Sox are working to establish here. So DeJong spoke to reporters after the ball game. Here's what he had to say.
Mental lapse there. I was, you know, worried about getting on base and just didn't keep track of it, and that's totally on me and cost us the game. So it feels pretty bad, but I'm just going to try to do better next time. That's all I can say.
Was the review, did that have anything to do with it?
I don't really want to make excuses. I got to know the situation, and yeah, I was a little emotionally invested in the review because I thought it was a hit-by-pitch, and you know, just kind of maybe took a little bit of the rhythm out of the game for me. So just got to do better, check in once the game gets going again.
Hear anything from Jason on that? Is he, or anybody, or?
No, not really. You know, I was just worried about maybe trying to get to second base on a dirt ball read. That was kind of where my focus was, and yeah, two strikes. I was kind of going on the swing, and it was only one out. So, you know, it's one of those things. Sucks, but just got to move on.
That's Paul DeJong after last night's mental mistake that ended the ball game for the White Sox and gave the win to the Tigers 2-1 yesterday. You heard it here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Sox are now 20-57 on the year. The Tigers go to 35-40. And what, you know, what you hear there is the accountability from DeJong. He's not passing the buck. He's taking full responsibility. And I think before, well, let's say this as well. DeJong gave you a reason that he may have been distracted, but reasons are different than excuses, right? A reason is the thing that you're looking to overcome and keep focused. He didn't, and he accepted the consequences of that. He stood by his locker and he talked to reporters after the ball game and after he had made a mistake, one that I'm sure he feels very embarrassed about. Well, how could you not, right? What he didn't do is tell you, well, this happened and this happened and this happened, and that's why I couldn't do my job and never anybody would understand it. There's none of that. Absolutely none of that. And at least you can credit him for that. Now, the next piece of all of this, I think, in my opinion, and you can certainly have yours, 312-332-3776. DeJong's back in the lineup today. Here's the 1-9 for the White Sox. Tommy Pham's in right. Andrew Benintendi is in left. Luis Robert Jr. in center field, right? So Benintendi, Robert, and Pham across the outfield, left, center, and right. Gavin Sheets will DH today. Andrew Vaughn is at first base. Paul DeJong at short and batting 6, 7, 8, and 9 for the White Sox. Corey Lee catching. Nicky Lopez at second base. And Lenin Sosa at third base. I had already seen some of the conversation, whether it be, you know, on Twitter or in some other places, mostly on Twitter, you know, about accountability and about this franchise and about where the defensive standards got set for this team and for this franchise, right? And I guess that's the large, the capital F franchise, right? The going forward of it all franchise, since the White Sox are in a obviously a down part of their of the team cycle, of the winning cycle, and hopefully headed upward very, very quickly. There are oftentimes spots in a season where a player makes a mistake whether it be of a mental or physical nature, and has to suffer an actual, you know, like an on-field consequence for something like that. I don't see this as that moment, and as it happens, so does White Sox manager Pedro Grifol. This is a mistake that Paul DeJong made. This is one that he owned up to. Perhaps if his response were anything other than what it was last night, you've got something different. But this is a vested veteran, a guy who's been around for a long time, who has been playing really well for your ball club, a guy who, and these are lesser reasons, right? I'm kind of going down the pyramid of reasoning here in terms of importance, but he is also a player that likely the White Sox would be interested in trading at some point as we get closer to the deadline. And those players need playing time to show other teams that they can continue doing what they're doing after setbacks, after bumps in the road, after mental mistakes, right? All of those things. And Paul DeJong's got another shot to be in the lineup this afternoon, batting six and playing shortstop. That makes sense to me. I have no problems with it. I understand that if you do, it's because of a mental mistake made by a veteran yesterday. I would just say to that, these things happen. And forgetting how many outs there are in the ninth after being hit by a pitch in a one-run ball game is not a mistake that's likely to occur again for a player like Paul DeJong or really any player, right? It's a different level of mistake than throwing past the cutoff man repeatedly or forgetting to touch a bag or not hustling to first after a dropped third strike. You know, things like that that recur on a regular basis. The events themselves recur, you know, not necessarily the mistakes. And so I think I put this in a very different basket and assess it a lot differently than those kinds of mistakes. That was the big story from last night's ball game. That and, oh, by the way, Eric Fetty pitched great again. 7 innings, 2 runs, 1 walk, 3 strikeouts. He gave up a 2-run home run to Carson Kelly in the second. Justin Henry Molloy, rookie-designated hitter who may have a position and also may not, is a talented young guy for the Tigers in terms of offensive output. He got a double on a changeup that was up. Carson Kelly took a good swing at a slider that Fetty had left over more than the bottom of the strike zone than he wanted to get it to. Kelly hit the 2-run homer. That was it for the Tigers, 2 in the second. And I thought, and I mentioned this in the postgame show last night too, I was a little apprehensive for Fetty in that ball game last night after the second inning, having given up the double, the homer, and then a single with 2 outs to Matt Vierling. Vierling just kind of filleted it through the right side. Then Fetty gave up a single to start off the third to Riley Green, who's having a pretty good year. Came back with a fielder's choice, rolled a double play, and went 1-2-3 in each of the next 4 innings. The fourth, the fifth, the sixth, and the seventh. No problems whatsoever for Eric Fetty. And I think probably my favorite part of watching Eric Fetty pitch this season has been that he can get through lineups and alter the pitch mix and get away with is kind of derisive, isn't it? He can still manipulate at bats without getting a gaudy number of strikeouts. Does that make sense? He's able to keep it off the barrel. He's able to mix velocities. He's able to induce weak contact. And not in a way where you look at some of the under-the-hood numbers and go, well, the batting average on balls in play is going to catch up with him at some point. Or, well, look at those exit velocities, though. Those are starting to creep up, and you got to wonder if some of this is luck. He's managed that really well. And where those criticisms or where those stats have kind of looked a little wonky at earlier points in the season, especially against left-handed hitters, he's been able to smooth and iron those out over the last, call it, 5-6 starts and really be a much better pitcher against both sides of the plate, against lefties and righties, than he had been in the first, call it, 6 weeks of the season. I've been incredibly impressed. And not just with Fetty in that regard, but also with guys like Garrett Crochet and Jonathan Cannon. I think the development in between turns through the rotation is pretty clear for each one of those pitchers, and not necessarily in the same way. So I think, and it's obvious when Chris Getz talked about it just the other day, and you're going to hear from White Sox general manager Chris Getz in a little bit here on White Sox Weekly, he talked about the strength of this White Sox franchise, and it is absolutely and 100% within the pitching infrastructure, right? Whether that's the guys down at Kannapolis that are all pitching fairly well. There's a couple in the Arizona Complex League that have looked really interesting as youngsters, as 18s and 19-year-olds, through the AA rotation, which has been absolutely stacked all year long and now includes what some are saying is the top prospect in the White Sox system, Noah Schultz. There's actually been a little bit of jumbling there by those who rank the systems throughout the bigs, and putting Noah Schultz on top as opposed to Colson Montgomery. Now, that's a pick 'em to me, right? I think when you look at Schultz and the dominance, and we'll go through some of the numbers a little bit later on in the show, but when you go through some of the numbers that Schultz has put up, yeah, I mean, you can put all kinds of dreams on that kid at 6'9", lefty, thrown with that arm angle, with that gross slider, an excellent command of a nasty fastball, all of that stuff, very true. And you could still say, while he might have the highest ceiling of any White Sox prospect, he will at best be a pitcher who works every 5 days, at worst be a reliever, you know, whose value is mitigated some by, you know, by being a reliever. And Colson Montgomery may well be an everyday shortstop for a big league team. Therefore, his future value is greater, right? It's a logical argument that holds for a lot of different prospect rankers. I completely understand it. That said, with what Schultz is doing at AA and Mason Adams and Jairo Iriarte, despite his recent struggles, you've got Drew Thorpe, who's now up with the bigs but had been there for a very long time. Jake Eater's pitching well, especially if you peek under the hood there and look past some of the perhaps rotten luck that he's had in a few different starts. Certainly he's had a bump or two in his turns through the rotation, but everything looks great down there. I mean, really, really good. So the strength of the system is with the pitching, and that development, even at the big league level, continues to show itself, and you've got to credit Getz and Brian Bannister and Ethan Katz, Matt Wise. I mean, these guys have put together a very good plan for the individuals and have seemingly put together a pretty good plan for the arms, you know, throughout the system here, development-wise. Notably, it's taking hold a bit more, at least at the big league level, in the rotation than it is in the bullpen at this point. And I wonder if that's just not something where... I wonder if that's not something that might be a little bit more spread across the talent itself rather than the actual process. But I guess that's a larger conversation, probably for something after the trade deadline, too, when we know or have a better sense of what the quote-unquote future arms in the bullpen might look like as well. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. You can join us every Monday home game for Southside Mondays presented by United Airlines. Watch your White Sox rep the Southside jerseys. Each specially priced ticket includes $20 in concession credit. To purchase, visit whitesox.com/Mondays. When we come back a little bit about the week that was for the White Sox, we'll get you set up for some real serious trade talk and conversation later on. Plus, you'll hear from White Sox general manager Chris Getz right at 10 o'clock. That's all coming up. You got White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Get weird with Waddle's World on ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. You're listening to the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. Join us for $5 Tuesdays at the ballpark. All fans will enjoy a specially priced $5 concessions menu, including draft beers from Miller Lite or Modelo, Garrett popcorn, stadium buttery, Vienna beef hot dogs, or Polish sausages, beggar's pizza slices, nachos, and select Coca-Cola products. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Tuesdays. White Sox and Tigers this afternoon. It is a 12:10 start, an 11:30 start to our pregame show, and we got White Sox Weekly up until then. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. We're going to get into trades, right? We're going to dig in as best we can about the potential for the White Sox to make some big and impactful trades of players that we like watching and maybe on the move. We're going to hear from White Sox general manager Chris Getz in just a couple of minutes. He spoke to White Sox beat reporters just prior to the first game against the Astros at Guaranteed Rate Field. It was a long conversation. Getz took questions for the better part of 20-something minutes, chopped that up with Brendan Riley, our executive producer, who actually knows how to use a computer as opposed to myself, who just kind of fumbles around a keyboard. Chopped it up into two parts. We're going to play part one first and part two second. That was the idea of Kevin Zipak, our producer. You know, continuity, that kind of thing. And we'll walk through it. We'll talk as best we can about what Chris Getz was kind of able to share. And there were certainly, whether it be after being asked about specific players or whether it be asked about the mindset of the franchise heading toward the deadline, there weren't a lot of punches pulled, or I guess not a lot of, you know, safety answers taken. There's a little bit of runaround, for sure, that a general manager has to do as you get closer and closer to a trade deadline, especially when you are, I suppose, protecting, you know, two assets in Garrett Crochet and Luis Robert Jr., who are impactful players and would be coveted additions for any team looking to make the playoffs this year and in years beyond. So you've got to be a little bit cagey. You can't give away the farm, right? What you're trying to do is acquire a farm, not give away a farm in trades like this. So we'll talk through it here in just a couple of minutes. I do want to say, as we approach today's ball game, though, that I'm looking forward, and I think I will be, for every start he gets at the big league level, and I'm hoping it's a lot more of them. I'm looking forward to this start for Drew Thorpe. I was thrilled about the first start against Seattle, right? Who wasn't? I mean, it all looked exactly like we thought it should look for Thorpe, right? Throwing that fastball right around 91, 92, a lot of good changeups, some good breaking stuff. Some of it was a little bit mislocated, but definitely showed you that it's there. And with a couple of tweaks and a couple of adjustments to maybe the aiming spot for that slider or whatever it is, you know, that you've got some room to grow here. Second start was horrendous. I mean, it was very, very bad. And Thorpe talked about it. Pedro Grifol talked about it a little bit. And I think with Thorpe, what we saw in that second start, pretty clearly, was a lack of command. And when he didn't land off-speed stuff early, and I'm including the changeup there to a certain degree. I know some when you say off-speed, some people are like, well, anything that's not the fastball, or off-speed is just breaking stuff and a changeup and everything, or sinker maybe is, or it doesn't matter. Anything not the fastball wasn't landing for strikes, which meant that he had to use a lot more fastballs to get strikes. And I don't know that that's how that pitch right now is necessarily designed for Drew Thorpe, right? It's at a hit-me speed. It has a good characteristic to it. And I'll tell you, I'll be straight up with you. I'm not the best at going through some of the rise and run numbers, right? Some of the advanced metrics in terms of spin rate and everything like that. I think I understand, you know, generally what we're talking about here, but I am absolutely not the best in defining pitch shape characteristics. It's something I'm working on. It's something I'm learning. It's just you flip on the screen and you see all those numbers and tunnels and stuff, and I think back to, I don't know, trig or something in high school, which made me break out into hives. So it's difficult, but I'm getting there. It's still a fastball. It's just not an elite one. And I think when you have to go get strikes, which Thorpe seemed to have to in that second start, when you have to go get strikes with a fastball that hitters would like to see as opposed to a Garrett Crochet fastball, you're going to give up more hits. And or at the very least, balls in play, which tend to turn into hits and, you know, tend to chalk up base runners. He also walked a bunch, right? And I think that's a huge key here. It's being able to command that strike zone and throw quality strikes with some of the off-speed stuff, maybe getting ahead with that changeup a little bit, which is a dicey proposition too, but something that Thorpe, with a nasty, nasty change, should be able to do, even against big league hitters. And I think this Tigers lineup, you know, it's a little underpowered. We were going through some of the stats in the pregame show earlier in yesterday's or before yesterday's game. And one of the things that the Tigers knew they'd have going into this season is a whole lot of pitching options, right? And whether some of those have come to fruition or some have gotten hurt or some have scuffled and had setbacks, they've certainly had plenty that have taken the next step, right? Whether that's Tarik Skubal or whether that's Reese Olson or whether that's, you know, last night with Jack Flaherty pitching incredibly well. The pitching's there, and it's a good bullpen too. The offense hasn't been very good, and I understand that here on White Sox Weekly, we've been watching an offense that has been at the bottom of the league in nearly every single statistical category every week we've come on and done the show. But the expectations for the Tigers this year, at least from the inside, certainly involved them challenging at the top of the AL Central and pushing teams like the Royals, like the Twins, and of course, like the Cleveland Guardians. the offense has been the thing that's prohibited them from doing that in a lot of different areas. And sure, they've got some injuries, right? Guys like Kerry Carpenter aren't playing right now. Spencer Torkelson's down in AAA trying to work on how to hit for power, which is something that not many thought Tork would have to work on, given his ridiculous, you know, high draft status, a 1-1 pick, and just the profile that he'd had in college out west. That's just not something people saw coming, or at least the Tigers didn't, it seems. And Javi Baez isn't playing for them well anyway when he is playing, and he's out right now too. So hopefully Thorpe is able to kind of establish himself a little bit against this lineup that's a bit underpowered and kind of swingy and interested in going out of the strike zone for a couple of pitches to hit. Hopefully Thorpe can take advantage of that. And before you say, well, sure, but if he does that against a an underpowered lineup, what does that really mean to you? It means everything to me. Because you've got to make those steps. You've got to see it. It's a little bit like a basketball player. Or I guess I just like this phrase in basketball. Sometimes you just got to see one go in, right? If you're in a cold stretch, shooting-wise, you'll often hear, hey, you just got to see one go in, and that kind of lights the lamp for the rest of the way. It's a little bit like that. I think it's a little bit like that when it comes to pitching. You just got to see it work a little bit, and then you can kind of trust it. Jonathan Cannon talked a bit about that, actually, in between his stints with the Bigs, having been sent down to AAA in the middle of two call-ups here. And we'll talk about Cannon a little bit some later on, but it's a bit like that. You got to see the stuff work, and then you can trust the stuff a little bit. Is it chicken and egg? Yeah, I think so. Probably a little bit. But baseball's weird, and you got to trust in the old axioms sometimes. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. When we come back, we'll start hearing from White Sox general manager Chris Getz. We'll tell you all about what's to come in just 10 seconds. We'll pause it here for station identification.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTVC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
So White Sox general manager Chris Getz spoke to reporters prior to the first game against the Astros at Guaranteed Rate Field earlier this week. You will hear part one of that conversation when we come back on White Sox Weekly. It's a Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. We got White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Get to the ballpark Wednesday, June 26th for Mexican Heritage Night presented by Modelo, and celebrate with friends and family as the Sox take on the Dodgers at 7:10 p.m. The first 10,000 fans, 21 and older, will receive an Aztec-inspired Mexican Heritage jersey. I've seen it. It's awesome. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. Chris Getz, White Sox general manager, spoke to reporters before the game against the Astros back on Tuesday afternoon. A lot of conversation, wide-ranging, a lot about trade targets, the status of the team, the franchise going forward, all that good stuff. Wanted to bring you two parts, this conversation Getz had with the assembled media. Here is part number one.
Chris, I guess how would you just kind of analyze the state of the team right now at this point?
Well, looking at, you know, the past week, the Seattle and Arizona series, I felt like there were, you know, a handful of moments that were really bright. You know, with Jonathan Cannon's outing, obviously the debut of Drew Thorpe, and to have Drew go out there and command the baseball the way he did in his debut kind of speaks to his ability. You know, he really never gave in. He pitched through pitches. Threw all his pitches at any count, and you know that was really exciting, obviously for him, but for the organization. So that certainly was a positive takeaway. Those were tough losses for us, not to be able to close out some of those games, but plenty of moments, you know, within that series with Seattle to feel pretty good about in terms of you know the future outlook of our club. You know, looking at the wins and loss record. Yeah, I mean, it's not something that you know, you get excited about looking at. Kind of speaks to the amount of work that we have ahead of us. But I you know, you look at what Eric Fetty and obviously Garrett Crochet and what he's done, the development of Corey Lee, and, you know, these young players that have come up. You look at Brian Ramos getting the opportunity that he had earlier in the year, getting a taste of the big leagues, and now doing pretty well down in Charlotte. So, you know, certainly focused on big picture. Not happy with where our win and loss record is right now. And, you know, talking regularly with Pedro and the staff to find ways for us to get better and put our players in the best position that we can to have success at this level.
You say you're not happy with the win-loss record, obviously, but when you look at the way that this team is playing, is it different than you envisioned it? There was a lot of talk about fundamental improvement, defensive improvement. Are you seeing those kinds of improvements? Are you seeing something you like in the way the team is playing?
Yeah, I think the team as a whole, you know, although the record's not very good, I think the intent and the energy, you know, playing for the White Sox and for each other, I sense a lot of positives in that. Have there been inconsistencies, whether it be with fundamental breakdowns and whether it be on the base running or defensive side? Yeah, that's popped up more than I would have liked. You know, it's obviously nice to have Louis Robert back into the lineup. And, you know, he's already shown what he's, you know, accustomed to doing and capable of doing both defensively and offensively. So I think, you know, we're certainly going to benefit from having him regularly in the lineup now and having Tommy Pham back and Benny as well, I think will position us better. But I, you know, really focused on the pitching this year and finding ways to improve our starting pitching, and you look at our rotation, you know, there's some pitchers that have thrown really well as starters, you know, here recently, and we want to continue to build on that and bring up potentially some players from the minor leagues to add to our starting rotation or in the bullpen or various spots on the position player front. So, you know, you kind of zoom out, you focus on, you know, ways to continue to build this organization to where it needs to go, you know, and on that subject, looking at, you know, Kannapolis and winning the first half was certainly a highlight for our player development group and Pat Leland and his staff. Really happy for those guys, and there's always you know, great benefit for our players to experience you know, chasing the championship at the minor league level, and this week in Birmingham, it's going to be an exciting week. They, you know, they're facing an opponent that's also battling for first place in their division. And you know, we've got Iriarte throwing tonight at Birmingham, and look forward to seeing how it unfolds this week for that club. So, you know, I think that's a positive step in the right direction on the development of our players, and certainly the direction of the organization as a whole. And then additionally, we're prepping for the draft right now. But so there are plenty of positives and certainly some, you know, too many areas right now that need improvement. And so, you know, work closely with our staff and build strategies for us to get better.
How do you think, hey, we've asked this, you know, so Pedro's done it. Is this, I don't know if you can answer this, is a guy that you see running the team the rest of this season for you guys?
Well, Pedro, you know, and I are still, you know, talking regularly, and like I said earlier, we're trying to put our players in the best position we can, you know, for not only be successful this year, but in the coming years. So, you know, there's a lot of work to be done, whether it be, you know, on our major league staff or you know, with our front office to take steps forward. So I know that naturally there's a lot of speculation on who's going to be in what role in future years, and really it's about showing up each day and figuring out how to put our players in the best position possible.
So many fans evaluate the manager based on the wins and losses. How do you evaluate the job of the manager?
Yeah, I look at the progress of our players individually. Obviously there's, you know, a huge component is playing together as a team. But really, if we're getting the most out of our players at you know, each position and every spot on a pitching staff, you're going to be in a good position to get a lot of wins. And you know, there's a long list of players that are playing well. Some players that haven't played up to their standard or what we expected, and that's just kind of part of baseball in general. But you show up the next day and you continue to fight to get better. And, you know, we certainly believe in a lot of the players that we have here. And, you know, we work, you know, we continue to work together and trying to find ways for us to get better.
Chris, is it a slippery slope, though, the tightrope you have to try to keep this team focused? Because losses mount. You get affected by the losses. And sometimes it affects, it may not affect now, but it can in the future, and also here in trade talks.
Well, I know, you know, we were very intentional with some of the individuals we brought in, knowing that this season could be a tough one. And, you know, you look at Paul DeJong and how professional he's been and the at-bats that he's been putting together and you know, he's been commanding the middle infield, which is what we expected to grab players to come in here that could face adversity because they've done that before and they know what it takes to navigate a major league season. And you look at Eric Fetty and what he's done. You know, he had obviously had a tremendous season last year in the KBO and had a track record of being a major league pitcher and see what he's doing here. But these leader types, these veteran types to come in to help, you know, bring along and develop some of these younger players was something that we were set out to do. And I highlight that because, you know, walking through the clubhouse and seeing the work in the cages and the side sessions and batting practice, you know, they're still very determined, regardless of some of the tough losses that they've experienced this year. And I expect nothing less from them moving forward, regardless of, you know, the noise or distractions. You've got, you know, we're nearing the trade deadline and, you know, there's certainly been a lot of interest on our players and we'll have, you know, ongoing conversations and, you know, there's times where I'll pull a player aside and, you know, they, I know that they're reading or their family's reading some of the rumors that are out there. And, you know, I try to be as upfront as I can and let them know whether there's truth to it or not, just so they can, you know, so we can once again put them in a good position to have a successful night.
Do you think movement is going to be quicker this year than waiting to the deadline because so many teams are in that logjam trying to break away?
It's tough to tell. You know, the easiest way to assess, you know, the pace in which this will move will be, you know, certainly the other side and their interest. I know there's plenty of teams if we felt like the offer was to the point where it's something that we can't really wait around on, we'll do that. I mean, I know that there's a pace to, you know, the 12-month cycle. You've got the off season, you've got spring training, you've got, you know, the first half and the second half. We've really, you know, had ongoing conversations since last fall with a lot of our players, and we feel like it's an opportunity to improve the health of our organization long term. We're going to do that.
As you get calls on players who have maybe multiple years of control left, do you have to weigh that would send a message to the fans or the clubhouse that, hey, we expect to be down for a couple of years after this? Or does that maybe, on the flip side, weigh into looking forward guys who can help you near term if you do waive trade players like that?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to, you know, be honest with yourself and the organization of where the talent lies. And you know, you look at, you know, our minor league system and obviously our farm system has been improving. And you know, I think the industry has us towards the top. We want to continue to add to that. You look at, all right, where does that talent lie within the farm system? When do we feel like they can be productive major league players? And you try to match that up with some of the players that are currently on our major league roster. And, you know, you've got to, you know, that's all part of the calculus. And even though there are some players with some control, you know, that's also when they often are most valuable as well. And the return can be substantial. So, you know, there's a couple different factors that go into it. We do recognize that, you know, it's likely that there are players with control on our major league club right now that perhaps won't be with us, you know, long term. But that's something that we're continuing to assess. And, you know, we'll continue to do that for the coming weeks here.
That sort of begs the question, though, where do you see the talent in the minor league system at this point?
I mean, I think the most obvious place to start is on the pitching front. And, you know, we just welcomed, you know, Jonathan Cannon back to the major leagues and adding Drew Thorpe. And you look at our double-A rotation of Kai Bush and Mason Adams and Jake Eater and what they've been able to do at that level. You know, clearly they're not too far off. And we've shown that, you know, we don't shy away from bringing players up from the double-A level. So, you know, we know that there is a learning curve to becoming a regular starting pitcher at the major league level. So, you know, we're trying to find the right opportunity for those guys to get acclimated. You know, Drew, you know, I think is a prime example. He had his first outing and was able to show what he's capable of doing. And then, you know, against Arizona, you know, it was a little bit uncharacteristic of him, and he was a little out of sorts. But man, what a great experience for him to learn to play against a team that was in the World Series last year. They have a solid offense. So, you know, to make the proper adjustments, we don't think it's a major adjustment at all. And, you know, we'll see how his next outing goes. But to find moments like that to continue the development up here so they can establish themselves as impactful major league players is vital. So you look at that rotation at AA. You know, we've got some guys in Charlotte, whether it be Brian Ramos and Colson Montgomery and a couple others that, you know, we're going to try to find the right window to bring those guys up. We want to make sure that they're, you know, there aren't any doubts and those guys are ready to be major league players. So, you know, just matching up once again with our major league club, with that minor league talent. You know, we feel pretty good on the pitching front. We're going to continue to add on that. It'll be interesting to see how the draft plays out. And, you know, we've got some options that are, you know, at the college level and the high school level, position player and pitcher. And, that'll help kind of dictate our path and the pace in which we think that we're really, really ready to compete, at the major league level. So, the not only the coming weeks, but the coming years are still developing. But, you know, we're unwavered with our determination and excited about the future of the White Sox.
As you assess the farm system now and the overall view of things, when is a reasonable expectation for you to be competitive again? 2026? Is that too soon? After?
It's tough for me to put an exact timetable on it. These types of things are certainly fluid. There's players that perhaps take a little bit longer to be ready to be productive at the major league level. You've got injuries that can happen. You've always got to have your thumb on it or pulse on it, so to speak, to be able to adjust accordingly. But I don't think I it would be appropriate or accurate enough to put a date out there in which we feel like we're ready to compete for the division. But, right now we're focused on, getting these guys acclimated to the major leagues and positioning them well for future success.
It's White Sox General Manager Chris Getz. Part one of a two-part conversation. We'll hear the entirety of it here on White Sox Weekly this morning. You can enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to attend Chicago's hottest summer events. June's winner will get two field pass tickets, to the Jordan Davis postgame concert presented by Coca-Cola on June 28th, plus two tickets to Lollapalooza, plus two tickets to Riot Fest, and Chicago's NASCAR weekend. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. We're going to get into some of the bigger things Chris Getz touched on here in the last couple of minutes. The defense and base running, the Pedro Grifol job security, the trade deadline, the timeline for success, all of that stuff. We'll talk about it next on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitch, ESPN 1000 Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. You're listening to the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. You can enter to all the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to attend Chicago's hottest summer events. June's winner will get two field passes to the Jordan Davis postgame concert presented by Coca-Cola on June 28th, plus two tickets to Lollapalooza and Riot Fest in Chicago's NASCAR weekend. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. We just wrapped up the first part of two from White Sox General Manager Chris Getz media session earlier in the week. And a couple of things I wanted to touch on here. You got asked questions really ranging about a number of different things, a lot on the developmental timeline and strength of the system being the pitching, all that other kind of stuff. One thing he mentioned too, and about the Major League Club that was early on in his session, was about the defensive issues, the base running issues that have been ever present for the White Sox in this season at 20 and 57. He said they popped up more than I'd like, and having Luis Robert Jr. back in the outfield certainly helps defensively. I understand that nobody's looking to bury anybody one way or another here, but it is really unfortunate. It has been, you know, from the start of the season, that the defense, something that Getz and Pedro Grifol really wanted to shore up this year, has not been shorn up. Sure, they brought in players like DeJong and Lopez and obviously Robert in center field and Tommy Pham, who's good in the corner and okay in center, and certainly did an able job, a much better than you could expect job in center field while Robert was out. Injuries have taken their toll on this team, as they have in the last couple of seasons, but also you've had some issues, right? I think that's pretty fair to say. And with yesterday's loss coming down to a base-running mistake by a veteran player in Paul DeJong, it is very true that part of the that what they tried to address there in this offseason did not get addressed in the way that they'd hoped. And there are still plenty of time left in this season, thinking after the trade deadline, to put new players in a lineup after guys do get traded, and some will, and reemphasize that part of the organization's development. I certainly hope that they're able to accomplish those things in this season, because it is still meaningful to get that done. And there will still be consequences, good ones, to shoring that up and to being a better, healthier defense and base running team. It's something that I still think that we, White Sox fans and whatever, should hold the franchise accountable for. It seems as though they've got their focus on that as well. As for Pedro Grifol, he was asked about Pedro's job security. I mean, in so many words. And obviously, at 20 and 57 right now, anyone's job security, anyone's, is in question. That's the business of baseball. And Getz was upfront at least about that part. He also said, you know, it comes down to individual progress by players when it comes to judging the manager and the coaching staff. And I think he's right in saying that there have been seasons, or I guess individual players, that have definitely had the kind of development or seasons or what have you that point to a better process and better coaching and better result getting out of those players. That's absolutely true. I think also what will be very interesting to see as it regards that part of the organization is what happens next after these coming 5 weeks, after these trades get made, and in regards to who gets brought into this organization talent-wise. How close are they to the big leagues? Can you put them in a major league lineup or rotation or bullpen immediately after acquiring these players? And if so, if those are some of the players that get brought in some of the trades that we'll be talking about quite a bit here in the second hour of the show, then you've got more to judge, right? You've got more to really assess and more to, I suppose, to a certain degree, hold accountable for that coaching staff and for that managerial staff and however you'd like to term it, because it is very clear that the future of this organization may well lie with players that aren't in this organization yet. Sure, there's plenty of building blocks, right? And Getz talked a lot about the pitching up and down the levels. It is real, right? I mean, you read the scouting reports, and if you haven't, I have, I promise. There's a lot of serious interest from people who make up the prospect writing realm of MLB and the scouting realm of it, too. There's a lot of interest in a lot of arms at many different levels in the White Sox organization. Need to start to balance that out, I think. Need to start to bring in some impact bats that have that same kind of interest, and whether or not this deadline and this draft, right, we haven't talked much about the draft, the White Sox with the fifth pick, is going to be able to bring those players in, or whether that's going to be an off-season task is yet to be decided, but it's certainly part of it. And to that end, when Chris was asked about the timeline of success, right, at what point then, I think Daryl Van Scowen of the Sun-Times was the guy to ask this question, at what point do you think you can be competitive? Chris kind of laid that question off a little bit. And I understand that, you know, I do. I understand the criticism that answer has gotten as well. I do. But I think what I believe the timeline for competition is for this White Sox team is to be decided after this July 30th deadline. I think you could put a lot better target on whatever that's going to be next after this trade deadline. And to that, that puts a lot of pressure, and should, quite frankly, on the front office to get this done the right way. There was a lot of pressure on this White Sox front office as it was comprised last season when they came up to the deadline and dealt away nearly an entire rotation and a good piece of the bullpen and a couple of others like Jay Berger on the position player side in addition. And that trade deadline has reaped a whole lot of benefits for this White Sox team. Kai Bush is pitching really well at AA. Edgar Caro can't miss, you know, all this sorts of stuff. There's more work to be done, and it's got to be done correctly here at this deadline. We'll talk about some of the players that may be shipping out and some of those writing up what those potential trades and fits could be. I think there's one. MLB.com's got an interesting article today. I think there's a player mentioned in there that we may not be thinking of right now, something that kind of raised my eyebrows a bit. We'll get to all that later on in the show. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, part two of White Sox general manager Chris Getz's address to the media earlier this week. This holds a lot of the juicy stuff. This is the what about Luis Robert? This is what about Garrett Crochet? All those questions will be answered by White Sox general manager Chris Getz when we come back on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Greeny 10 to noon weekdays, ESPN Chicago.
Be at the ballpark on Friday, June 28th for a post-game concert presented by Coca-Cola. Don't miss your chance to see chart-topping country music artist Jordan Davis after the White Sox take on the Rockies at 6:10 p.m. June 28th is coming up. Fans must have a game ticket to attend the concert. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/concert. I'm Connor McKnight. You're listening to White Sox Weekly. White Sox and Tigers coming up. It's a 12-10 start. Drew Thorpe and Kenta Maeda. Gave you the lineups earlier in the show, but now, here in the middle of White Sox Weekly, we've been listening to White Sox general manager Chris Getz and his address to White Sox beat reporters earlier in the week, just before the first game against the Astros at Guaranteed Rate Field. We played part one for you already and addressed some of the questions and the answers that Chris Getz was asked and answered. Now, part two deals with a lot more of the nitty-gritty, the Luis Robert of it all, the Garrett Crochet, all that kind of stuff. So here is part two of Chris Getz with White Sox beat reporters earlier this week.
How do you assess who's part of the core, even if the guy who could be part of the core is someone who gets you a big return in a trade? Because there's always some speculative nature of prospects. You know, I mean, they could be top 10, top 20, and still not pan out eventually. So how do you assess a guy who's contributing at the major league level to whether he's a guy moving forward or a guy you can move right now?
Well, it's about having talent and bringing talent into the organization. There's different mechanisms to do that. You've got the amateur draft in which we're prepping, obviously international as well. You've got trade acquisition. We're an organization that wants to build from within. We really believe in our development process. There's a time to go out into free agency to help improve your major league club. We don't want to be reliant on it. Our goal is to be able to build that with our prospects that have gone through our minor league system to be at our major league club. So, to identify a player, whether it's someone we can build around or not, I think there's a handful of different, you know, factors that go into assessing that, and that really is probably a more timetable sensitive question that, you know, we're still assessing at the moment.
Where's your comfort level with the Garrett Crochet experiment? You know, you're in uncharted waters here. You're well past his innings count. Where's your comfort level as far as letting him go?
Sure. For one, he's been excellent. I mean, for someone that was a believer that Garrett Crochet could be a starter, among others in the organization, I think this experiment could not be going any better. We've got different, feedback loops to measure, how sustainable this is. And, you look at biomechanically, you look at his workouts, you got a sports science component, you got an analytic component. Certainly any fan can watch the game and see that he doesn't seem to be slowing down. Now, you don't want to be reckless. We've had conversations with Garrett. At some point, we're going to have to make some adjustments here, being that this is uncharted territory. But he also continues to perhaps even defy a little bit of logic with what he's doing, because this is the best version we've ever seen of Garrett. He's really taken to being in a rotation. He's taken advantage of the days in between each start, and he's just, you know, whether it be he's getting stronger or maintaining the strength that he has. So there are a handful of measurables that go into, you know, how to map out the remainder of the year. All I know is, you know, he's going to start tomorrow, and I expect him to have another quality start, because that's what he's been doing throughout the whole year. So it's exciting, you know, for Garrett, for the organization, and, you know, we look forward to helping navigate the remainder of the year.
How did going through the process of trading Dylan before the season started kind of inform how you're going to approach, you know, listing out players at the trade deadline and trying to make sure you get the package you want?
Well, I know, you know, being that Dylan was an attractive player to so many different organizations, I do believe it gave us a head start in regards to getting to know organizations, whether that applies to Garrett or anyone else. You know, having you know, such a valuable player like Dylan, you know, in my first offseason as general manager, has allowed me to build relationships with other general managers and get to know other organizations. So I do feel like we're well positioned when we feel like the time is right. But when it comes to Garrett, more than anything, we're focused on helping him navigate the season. You know, he's just getting his career started as a starting pitcher, and he's proven baseball in the world that he's one of the best in the game. And I think I can speak for any fan out there that when they know that he's on the mound, that whether it be our team or any other team, you know, that your club has a good chance to win. But we're continuing to figure out what's best for the organization in regards to Garrett. But primarily, we're focused on getting a start tomorrow and continue to map out the rest of the year.
Is there any emphasis on getting positional talent, given that your system is stronger or deeper, at least the pitching side, or are you comfortable kind of stockpiling pitching given the success you've had developing and dealing from that as needed?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're. For one, our priority is bringing in talent, you know, to the organization, whether it be on the pitching side of the or the position player side. There's different ways to acquire position players, and it could be through pitching capital. So there's an argument from a strategy standpoint to continue to bring in pitching to help you acquire position players. Obviously, there's, you know, going to come a point where we do need to improve offensively. Although, you know, the last couple weeks we've seen some kind of a turn on the offensive side, but we know long term we're going to need some bats that, you know, show up every day. We've got power, the ability to get on base, steal bases potentially based on, you know, each individual. So there's different ways to go and acquire the position player talent. You know, so I more than anything, we're looking at the best player we can bring into the organization we can, regardless of what position.
You spoke in December about the unlikelihood of you guys trading Luis Robert back then, talking about him as a guy to build around. Has anything you've learned about your organization and your future moving forward since then kind of changed your thoughts on how likely he might be to stay or go?
Well, the unlikeliness is really the, you know, does an organization have what it takes to acquire some of the talent we have? And obviously Luis, one of those players that, you know, is such an elite talent. So, you know, is there a willingness from another organization to provide what we feel like is, you know, the line or above the line for us to convert on a trade? So, you know, it was probably, you know, when you're just, you know, measuring the likelihood of a move, you know, it was, you know, kind of, I think, fair to say that it was going to be harder for a team to acquire a player like Luis Robert or whether it be a Garrett Crochet or anyone else on the roster. But with that being said, you know, we're still assessing, and, you know, we haven't certainly devalued any of our players and what we feel like they're capable of doing at the major league level. They haven't shown that. I mean, Luis Robert comes back to the lineup you know, not only the production that potential you see with him, but also the impact it has on others in the lineup, and then certainly on the defensive side. You know, he's a game changer in so many different ways. So, you know, an acquiring team would have to bring something that is pretty significant for us to move on some of these guys.
Moncada still targeted for after the All-Star break, or what is the update on?
Right around the All-Star break. We do feel like he's turning the corner and working towards more, game activity, so to speak. Eloy played last night. We're hoping to have him back next week. Obviously, you can adjust based on how he's feeling and how he's doing. Those two players are certainly big pieces of this organization and our Major League club, and it does look like Eloy is not too far off.
Will we still see guys coming up? You've given a lot of looks to different pitchers, but as the season progresses, second half, is it going to be a continuation of that?
I believe so. I mean, you certainly want to make sure that you feel like they've got a solid base under them, can feel confident about what they've accomplished, regardless of whether they're on the Major League team this year or not. I do think that there is tremendous benefit of getting Major League exposure, both for the organization, but certainly the player as well for their further development. But I do anticipate more players breaking into the Major Leagues this year.
Generally speaking,
yeah, I mean, I get peppered regularly. I would say that it's picked up even more here recently, and I would expect it not to slow down. Which is okay, because as we continue to want to build this organization back, the one of the better avenues to doing so could be on the trade front. So, I would say that there are a handful of conversations being had on a daily basis, and I'm sure I've already had some today, and I would expect probably a couple more before the end of today.
Can you use the market to your advantage in the sense that, with the extra wild card today, there are so few teams that are looking more to the future than are right now. You guys obviously are one of them. Can that play to an advantage in terms of how you value player, or is that something that doesn't really enter the equation in these discussions?
When you look at the market and let's say you're trying to optimize or take advantage of situations, I think there's certainly different ways to do that. I think, there's a handful of clubs that are fighting for a wild card spot. They perhaps believe that they're at a stage that they're not ready to really go beyond that wild card spot or make a deep playoff run. So, does that urgency change what an offer would be? I think the short answer would be yes. You've got, when I look back to the pace of the off season and the pace in which I've experienced now here nearing the trade deadline, the urgency does seem to be pretty, I would say, pretty great with some of these clubs that feel like they may have a special team. Therefore, might extend themselves and be really aggressive. I think that there could be opportunity to take advantage of that. But it's still developing, but certainly ready for anything.
Do you see the draft as a kind of a major point of front office maybe need to get past that to have their full focus on it? Do you see it as things are kind of percolating now?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a team of people that can focus on, certainly the draft and, the potential trade acquisition that might be out there. We've got our scouts, we've got our analysts, we've got our front office that are able to walk and chew gum, so to speak, when it comes to, handling both. Things will tighten for the draft here shortly as we get closer. We've got our group out at the combine right now, getting to know some of those players, watching those players, meeting with those players, and I anticipate the focus to tighten even further as we begin our in-person draft meetings and up until the draft. When the draft's over, the deadline becomes kind of the headliner and the attention, and it's kind of a quick change. But we're well positioned, and that's just because we've got a really talented group to be able to handle both, and then certainly delegate it.
You talked so openly about Garrett, just where you guys are at in your process here and trying to build, preclude you from thinking about maybe extending him, or is that something that you guys have really thought to?
More than anything, it's just helping him navigate this season, putting him in position for future success. I know that, he's focused on that, and that's where the organization's at as well.
It's White Sox general manager Chris Getz. A lot to get to there, especially as it pertains to the deadline and players the White Sox may well be moving prior to July 30th. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. You want to talk White Sox trades, that's going to be the focus of the show going forward here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago.
Welcome back. It's White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. We have been listening to White Sox general manager Chris Getz. Just wrapped up the second part, final part of his conversation with White Sox beat reporters at Guaranteed Rate Field earlier this week. A lot about the trade deadline in this last little bit. I wanted to start with some of the responses he gave to the questions he got asked. One of them by Lamont Pope of the Chicago Tribune, asking about whether or not the frequency of phone calls have been picking up here of late from other GMs. And he says he got peppered. He's getting peppered regularly, is Chris Getz. A lot of phone calls from a lot of different other GMs. And if you pair that with the conversation or the response that he had in the early part of the conversation, the part where he essentially said, we are open for business, and kind of the variable here is going to be on buyers willing to make that move, right? He said in the first part of the conversation, if the offer is a good one and something that we're not, willing to wait on a little bit, something that, makes sense to us now, we're willing to go, which, that's GM talk, I think, but we're ready to pull the trigger. The White Sox moved Robbie Grossman earlier in the season for minor league reliever Anthony Huopi Tuiantotoa. They were ready to go. The Rangers were ready to go. It takes two to tango, obviously, but the White Sox are, it seems, ready to make moves. And this makes sense to me from a lot of different angles. It's something that we've been talking about quite a bit here on the show, that I've been talking about a bit with Cap and Jay Hood in the morning on ESPN 1000 when I'm on with them talking about the White Sox on a weekly basis. To me, especially when you look at a guy who like Eric Fetty, who threw last night, 7 innings, a 2-run ball, 1 walk, 3 strikeouts. To me, Eric Fetty seems like the kind of player that if you were a contending team and had a good but not great rotation, that you'd want to go out and trade for. A guy that's got cost certainty next season, $7.5 million. Real good cost certainty given the level of production that he's got. He came into the start last night, 3rd in Major League Baseball in pitcher wins above replacement. That's good. That probably went up a little bit with last night's pitching performance. He is also the kind of guy who may not be the top-end starter, right? He's not the number one. He's not Corbin Burns that moved just prior to the deadline. He's not the Dylan Cease that got moved, I said prior to the deadline for Burns, but obviously that was a spring training trade or offseason trade. Dylan Cease having been moved in spring training, too. He's not of that level, right? He's not that huge strikeout game one, game two starter, I think, in a playoff series, but he could certainly start Jay game 3. And if he's not your game 3 option and he's just kind of a depth guy in the rotation and you're looking to add him in to help you get to the playoffs, then you absolutely want to trade for him earlier than later. Because the margin of value of those 4 or 5 starts that you'll get, your contending team will get out of a pitcher like Eric Fetty are more valuable to you than less starts. You've got to make the playoffs. You need those extra wins in order to guarantee yourself that playoff spot. And once you get in, anything can happen. That's the nature of baseball right now. That's the nature of the expanded playoff. That's the nature of the game. Just get in, see what happens. Worked for the Diamondbacks last year. They got all the way to the World Series. To a certain degree, it worked for the Rangers. I mean, remember, that team, like, what, 10 days prior to the end of the season, had lost its top spot in the AL West. The Astros came surging back. The Rangers were playing absolutely horrible baseball in the last week or so, starting to maybe get their footing back a little bit. And then the postseason hits, and Adolis Garcia goes crazy, and, you know, everything. Josh Zboris turns into a playoff hero. The whole thing, right? We watched it happen, and the Rangers won a World Series, kind of just by getting in. Imagine if, and that AL West came down to, I mean, we were really close to having a three-team tie between the Astros, the Mariners, and the Rangers. Had that happened, boy, wouldn't the Rangers or the Mariners or the Astros all have wished that they made their move a day earlier, 5 days earlier, to get that one pitcher, whomever it was at the deadline, to start one more game and win them one more and keep them out of that playoff. Keep them out of a 163. We don't do 163s anymore. I wish we did. But keep them out of that tiebreaker, right? That's the value that I'm talking about here. It's a guaranteed playoff spot as opposed to just kind of hanging in there and chasing. And I guess this is a personal pet peeve of mine. And I don't run a Major League Baseball team, God forbid. If I did, though, I would try to zig where others zag, at least in as many places as made sense, both financially and long-term, right? Because it's not like teams don't have budgets and have to keep to them. But when you've got an opportunity here to, you know, set the marketplace, to jump on an asset that seems as controllable and as reliable as anybody else pitching right now, it makes sense from that perspective to go ahead and make a move like this. And that's what makes Eric Fetty really appealing to, I think, a lot of different clubs. In fact, MLB.com has a piece entitled 13 Top Trade Candidates and Their Potential Fits Right Now. Mark Feinsand wrote this up. He's a good one. And it goes through players like Tyler Anderson of the Angels, Miguel Andujar, Garrett Crochet of the White Sox. We'll get to this in a second. Paul DeJong of the White Sox as well. Elias Diaz, catcher for the Rockies, who I think just got hurt the other day too. Carlos Estevez, the closer for the Angels. And then Eric Fetty, right? And I'll read you the write-up here. There's less on Fetty than there are on some other players on this list. But here's what it says. Fetty's return to the majors has been solid, as the right-hander has a 5-1 record and a 3.09 ERA over 87 and a third innings in his first 15 starts. So that includes last night's performance. Fetty signed a 2-year, $15 million deal, so an acquiring club would be taking on the remainder of his $7.5 million salary this year, plus $7.5 next, a very reasonable price for a reliable starter. Then the piece goes on to list potential fits for the player. And for Fetty, Feinsand's got the Astros, curious, the Cardinals, I could see it, the Milwaukee Brewers. And for me, you know, looking at the NL Central, the way the Brewers have stayed on top of that division and outperformed a lot of different projections for them coming into the season, especially after they dealt Corbin Burnes to the Orioles. Listen, the Brewers are a small market team. They aren't making big value cash additions. They spent the money on Christian Yelich. That has been their biggest financial commitment, and it will remain their biggest financial commitment, it seems, until his contract comes to an end, whenever that comes to an end. I think it's like 2050 or something like that. But Fetty at $7.5 million fits any team in baseball, financially speaking. He's also, don't you just kind of feel like Eric Fetty is the kind of guy with a lot of ground balls, some weak fly balls, and not too many strikeouts that fits a Brewers rotation? I get that's like the soft science of this thing, but it makes sense to me. They're an advanced team when it comes to sabermetrics and development and analytics and whatnot. Fetty seems to fit that. He used the slow motion camera and all that other kind of pitch grip stuff to alter his approach, go to the KBO, and completely change who he is as a pitcher regardless. So I don't know. I feel like the White Sox being in the position they're in, right? And we'll talk about this some when we come back after the break here and at the top of the hour. Chris Getz said some really specific things as it regards Crochet and Robert, right? About how difficult it's going to be for other teams to acquire them. And he's got some interest in here in setting the marketplace as high as possible for two of his best players. But it's going to be difficult for a farm system to go ahead and trade the appropriate value for either one of those players. For Fetty, that's not necessarily the case. You've got pretty much the entire run of Major League Baseball that can A, afford him, and B, give the prospects for Fetty. You'll get something very solid for Eric Fetty if you're trading him. You will not, however, get the demand that you've got to put out there for Garrett Crochet or Luis Robert. And that's all right. This could be one of the best trades you make in this offseason if you're Chris, in this trade deadline if you're Chris Getz. However, maybe the best thing about it is that you're able to bid the entire league, anybody contending against one another, as opposed to kind of starting to narrow down your list of potential trade partners because of the prospect value you have to demand for guys like Garrett Crochet and Luis Robert Jr. We'll see. We'll talk about those things when we come back after a quick break. 312-332-3776. This is White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
The Sox on your phone, the ESPN Chicago app.
Kids autograph sessions are back on Family Sundays, presented by Coke Zero Sugar. The first 125 kids to enter at Gate 5 will head to a special area to receive autographs from some of their favorite players. Plus, enjoy family-friendly activities. Kids can run the bases and more. To learn more and purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Sunday. I'm Connor McKnight. You're listening to White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Coming down to the end of the show here, 11:30, we start the pregame show. And a 12:10 first pitch for the White Sox and Tigers, Drew Thorpe and Kenta Maeda. The starting pitching matchup. Certainly looking forward to a better outing from Drew Thorpe in his third start in the bigs than his second. Maybe something more like his debut against the Mariners would be great. And, you know, just real quickly here, because I try and mention it every White Sox Weekly because it's one of my favorite things. The kids run the bit, which I just kind of gave you the promo for whitesox.com/Sunday for Family Sundays and kids autograph sessions at the ballpark. One of my favorite things about having this job is the kids run the bases on Sunday afternoons. And you might think, oh, Connor, you're just, you know, whatever, it's this is a whole thing. It's not. It's really not. Since having a daughter about a year and a half ago, I mean, listen, the kids run the bases things has always been fun, right? They walk down to the thing, they line up, they're all excited, they run around. It's just awesome to watch them have the kind of fun that they do down there at Guaranteed Rate Field running the bases. Now that I've got a kid, and I don't know if this changed for you when you had your children, or when, you know, as you're thinking about having them, wherever you're at in the phase of your life or what have you, you watch them down there, and then you think, man, I can't wait for mine to be able to go run the bases. You can't wait for that moment. And God, it's just so cool to see. And every once in a while, often really, you get White Sox players out there that'll help them go from third to home or something like that. I know I've mentioned this before, but Liam Hendricks was a pretty frequent guy that you'd see down there on the field while kids were running the bases, just kind of helping them out, jogging them down from third to home or something like that. Or oftentimes you'll see guys, you know, hung around a little bit, cheering them on when they get to home, that kind of stuff. It's one of my favorite things about baseball right now. It just is, and I hope that doesn't go away for very long. For a very long time, kids run the bases on Sundays, plus the Family Sundays kids autograph sessions. That's awesome. First 125 kids enter at Gate 5, go to a special area, receive autographs from some of their favorite players. Be at the ballpark come Sunday this weekend, and it'll be a good time for you and the kids. The White Sox will play the Rockies this coming Sunday at Guaranteed Rate Field. Not, you know, tomorrow, but the Sunday after that, June 30th. So some of the stuff that White Sox general manager Chris Getz had to say about the trade deadline and specific trade targets that the White Sox will have out there for various teams were about Garrett Crochet and Luis Robert Jr. And some of this is a bit of an echo from things I've said in the last couple of weeks and on with Cap and Jay Hood and whatnot. I think this is my speculation on things, putting together what I've heard from Chris Getz in those media sessions and what I've read from, you know, reporters and others in other places. I think it would be really difficult for the White Sox to make a trade of Garrett Crochet and Luis Robert, make a trade of Garrett Crochet or Luis Robert at this deadline. And I mean both of those things, right? Those are two different circumstances. Are you trading both? Are you trading one or the other? I think those are different. I think those are different setups, right? I think those are different realities, because I think trading one does make the White Sox a little bit less likely to trade the other by this deadline, right? All that we're talking about here in this segment of the show is whether or not either get traded by this deadline, July 30th. During the offseason, I think everything resets. We're in a brand new world, and what the White Sox acquire by way of their trades, whether that includes Crochet and or Robert at this point in this deadline, is going to change and inform how the White Sox approach the offseason of 2025, right? The next winter. I think with Robert, it becomes incredibly difficult, and it's something that you see and hear from a lot of different places written up. Oh, hey, could we go? The Dodgers writer, could they go get Luis Robert? Phillies writers, oh, could they go get Luis Robert? You know, all that kind of stuff. I think it's difficult for a lot of different reasons, and maybe the biggest one isn't the prospects that the White Sox need to get in return and isn't matching that value for the 3 years left on the contract and the relative cost savings and certainty that Luis Robert is, given the fact the White Sox signed him to a pretty savvy contract extension if he's healthy and producing the way he did last year. It's really about the health, unfortunately, for the team acquiring Luis Robert Jr. at this point. And I wish that weren't the case. Mostly, I wish that weren't the case because that means we'd been able to watch a lot more healthy Luis Robert Jr., which I find to be fantastic. And had he been able to be healthy, and unfortunately he wasn't, maybe we're talking about a different shape to this season. Maybe we're talking about the desperate need for the White Sox to hang on to Luis Robert despite any trade offers that might come their way, because you can, through other trades and a savvy draft and good player development, get the franchise back to a point where they're winning with Luis Robert Jr. in center field and making a move like that over the next couple of seasons. I don't know that that's where the franchise is right now. And I don't know that they know at this point, because the very thing that's keeping, from my perspective, keeping other teams from putting together the prospect package for Robert is going to be, you know, that health concern. The fact that he's not returned to form since coming back and getting healthy enough to play in big league games, still waiting on that as well. And if those are all the case, which I believe they are, if all of those things are still, call them variables here for teams taking a serious swing at a trade for Luis Robert Jr., I don't know that the White Sox would want to make that deal. They've got time on their side. They don't have to rush anything when it regards that player because the contract exists. And I think that's the way they play it. I do. Again, this is my guess. This is probably what I would do if I were, you know, at the sticks of MLB The Show and operating this franchise at this point in time with everything staying the same. I think that's how I'd play it, because if you are going to make that move, whether it's on MLB The Show or anywhere else in real life, maybe, you've got to get everything you ask for. You just have to. And I don't know that getting less than your dream is going to be satisfying to either, you know, the fans. Not that that necessarily takes a huge account in what general managers have to do. It's a business, after all, for them, for fans, for everybody. Or your respective, you know, the people you report to, your respective peers, all that other kind of stuff. You've got to be able to set a market, I think, at some point with trades of this caliber, and Robert is certainly of that caliber. Now, for Garrett Crochet, I think the concerns are somewhat similar, right? The variables here are somewhat similar, and that's the biggest one being you get to wait if you're the White Sox. You have control over the player for another two seasons. After this one concludes, you do not have to press yourself in any sort of we've got to do this situation. And obviously, and this is something we've been talking about since Garrett Crochet made what, like start number five for the White Sox, because he'd been so great with the exception of like three starts right in the middle of these 15, 16 starts he's made. You've obviously got the innings concern with Crochet. Nobody's done this before. The parallels, the comps, they just aren't here. And I'm hearing more and more from writers and pundits around baseball that a contending team could, quote, just throw him in the bullpen. And then he's your playoff weapon out of the pen and all that. Yes, that is absolutely true. You could. You could lessen the concerns from the innings load by moving Garrett Crochet into the bullpen, but that guarantees you nothing. And if you're a contender trying to acquire pitching, yeah, you're dealing with the inherent risk of trading for an often injured asset. And that I don't mean Garrett Crochet, I just mean pitchers in general. Though Crochet does have injury history of his own, shoot, he's coming off Tommy John and shoulder issues all last year that limited his ability to compete out of the bullpen. And now performing like a superhuman with no issues whatsoever, and every next pitch is better than the last one. Yeah, I get that too. But with Crochet, because of what you're dealing with, what you don't know about how the White Sox, how Crochet, how these turns through the rotation are taking their toll or will eventually need some sort of adjustment, you don't know. And because you don't know, I don't know that a contending team is going to make an offer the likes of which the White Sox are going to be thrilled about. Because if I'm, you know, GM whatever, if I'm working for the Dodgers and making my – I'm just picking the Dodgers because they're on the top of the division and I've been looking at the NL here during the break. If you're the Dodgers going like, hey, we want Garrett Crochet, but we're going to throw him in the bullpen, and because of that – and yeah, we get the 2 years of control, so you get this level of prospects or whatever, but we're going to throw him in the bullpen because we don't trust him because of that insecurity. We're not willing to give you the guy that you've asked for when we started talking about this. It's not happening. I don't know that that's how you want to start dealing. I don't know that that's how you want the underlying framework of a trade like that to go. I think that with both of those players, you've got to set certain standards. You've got to make sure they get hit. And if those can only be hit in the offseason, then so be it. Then that's how that works. I think for the rest of, you know, tradable targets for the White Sox, things are much more straightforward, much more straightforward. With guys like Paul DeJong, guys like, yeah, I don't know, pick the rest, right? I don't know that there's anybody that's limited in the way that Robert and Crochet may well be limited here when it comes to moving them at a deadline. And furthermore, I don't know that that's a bad thing for the White Sox. I really don't think that it is. I think it's just a circumstance you've got to navigate, and it's certainly one that can be navigated because of the talent of these players, because of the success in the development of Garrett Crochet that the White Sox organization has been able to work with him to get out of the player. Those are all good things, and those should all be good things for the White Sox going forward, whether it be with the players they get in return for some of those trades or their own prospects, some of which are absolutely beginning to blossom down at Double A specifically. When we come back, we're going to hear from White Sox Double A manager Sergio Santos. He had some press availability earlier this week and a couple of things to say about the environment down at Birmingham. They won the first. Look like they're going to win the first half and get themselves a playoff spot. They have been absolutely fantastic when it comes to the pitching, and they've gotten some great performances out of top prospects like Edgar Caro as well. And Sergio Santos has been right there guiding the team throughout it all. So we'll hear from Sergio when we come back. Before we hit the break, we've got to pause real quickly, 10 seconds, for station identification.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
White Sox and Tigers coming up at 12:10, less than an hour from now. Pre-game show at 11:30, and Double A manager Sergio Santos when we come back on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Carmen and Yurko, noon to 3, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. Last little bit for us here on the show before the pregame show for the White Sox and Tigers begins in just about 10 minutes. You can kick off NASCAR's Chicago Street Race and join us next Sunday, June 30th, for NASCAR Car Day, presented by Skill. For a limited time, receive a number 34 White Sox Michael McDowell shirt when you purchase a specially priced ticket. To purchase those tickets, visit whitesox.com/NASCAR. Double A manager Sergio Santos spoke with reporters earlier this week. He has had a great season down at Double A Birmingham and talked a bit about some of the specific players that he's got down there. Thought you might like to hear a scouting report or two from the manager himself about some of these guys. Jake Eater has been pitching really well of late, and he was the guy acquired by the White Sox from the Marlins for Jake Berger. Here's Santos on Jake Eater.
So he's done a really good job this year. I mean, he's got incredible stuff. You know, he's the one starter we have that, you know, when I kind of go out to the third base box to coach, you know, their third baseman or shortstop, it's happened a couple of times where they're like, man, who the heck is this guy? Because he's got some really nasty stuff. And so Eater's one of these kids that is eager to learn, right? Like he wants to get better. He's an open book. He is open to ideas and trying new things. And I think, yeah, him and Bannister kind of figure something out. I mean, he's just got incredible stuff. And if he can put it all together consistently, I mean, the guy's going to be a definite starter in the big leagues.
Sergio Santos on Jake Eater there. And yeah, I mean, this was the scouting write-up. They had picked up Jake Eater after some injuries and set him back some. And prior to those injuries, a lot of scouts were writing him up as one of the better arms in the minor leagues. So it was a buy-low kind of thing, I think, on Eater. At the height of Jake Berger's work, it's a deal that I get a lot of people. I mean, listen, I loved covering Jake Berger. One of my favorite guys. But baseball moves are baseball moves at times, and this is one they made, and hopefully you're getting the value from. Noah Schultz has been up at Double-A for a couple of weeks now. He is the White Sox top pitching prospect. He's the 6'9" draftee out of high school who has just been, I mean, something else. Here's Santos on Noah Schultz.
Yeah, he's got incredible stuff. You know, Noah, a lefty being 6'9", and how athletic he is. I mean, he's made some plays kind of off the mound, you know, on bunts or some swinging bunts. That's pretty impressive. But, I mean, look, he's 95 to 98 with a wipeout slider. You know, he's close. I just think he needs more innings and more experience. And without a doubt, he'll make a big impact when he gets to the big leagues.
Schultz has an innings restriction on him this year. I don't know that there's necessarily a total, but he's mostly been going just four innings in his starts, and it's by design. He just hadn't pitched much. If you remember, Schultz had mono at the end of his senior high school season, and then the COVID year, too, kind of threw some things off in terms of his ability to even, you know, throw a lot. So they're being very, very cautious and careful about what he's the workload he's been given. Edgar Caro has been absolutely ridiculous in the month of June. He is hitting .426 with a .473 on base and a .691 slugging percentage in the month of June. Got off to a bit of a slow start, but safe to say that he's reclaimed that with what he's been able to do over the last, really it's been about 8 weeks or 6 weeks or so. On the year, don't scout the stat line. I get it, but here's what we've got. On the year, he's hitting .279 with a .358 on base and an .827 slugging percentage. Santos talked about Caro as well.
Yeah, with Q, you know, I was never worried, even when he was going through a little bit of those struggles. He's just one of those guys that is a pro, right? Like, he takes pride in his defense. He takes pride in calling a game and then the hitting secondary. But, I mean, the guy can flat out hit. He hits from both sides. And so you knew it wasn't going to be long of him not hitting. He was going to bounce back just because he's that good of a player.
So you talked about Caro and his offense. You know, we hear all the time that catchers, it's a lot to develop because they've got two things or more to worry about. What has he been like as a catcher and working with the pitching staff down there?
Yeah, he does an incredible job. I mean, in between innings, he gets with the pitcher, you know, right away saying, hey, you know, what do you want to do they plan ahead for the next inning. They talk about what went well that last inning. You know, he's not afraid to speak up and kind of go in on the pitcher when he feels like he needs to. And he's really good at picking a guy up when he also needs to. So it's very evident from his work that he takes a lot of pride, you know, what he does behind the plate. And that's nice because, like I tell him, catching, you know, comes first and then you're going to hit because he's a good hitter. But, you know, running the pitching staff is definitely far more important.
Last one here. One of the guys that he's been working with, Caro has been Jairo Iriarte, the other pitcher the White Sox got in return for Dylan Cease. And Iriarte's had, over his last four starts, three really rough ones, one quality start there too. He's had to battle some, and Santos has been impressed with that.
Just watching on TV the other night, it seemed like a really interesting start with Iriarte because you could easily saw the first couple of innings and thought, like, well, this is in his night. Let's get him out of here. What was kind of the process of, you know, challenging him and also seeing him kind of get out and settle down and deliver you, you know, four good innings after the early struggles?
Yeah. So, you know, at first we were trying to figure out just because they were taking such good swings off him, and Iriarte's got incredible stuff, as you guys know, it's swing and miss stuff. So then we kind of started looking, and I think Angel Rosario Rosie noticed something that he may have been tipping. So we made that adjustment, and then he was able to throw four scoreless right after that.
I guess that show you aptitude, composure for him to make that adjustment. Yeah,
100%. Yeah, like I said, so my nickname for him is El Tigre, which is the tiger, right? And it just, you see the transformation, because he's a very, you know, fun, easygoing guy on non-start days. And then the day of his start, you just see that transformation of his focus and everything kind of getting geared up. But he's just one of those guys that when he gets on the mound, he's going to compete. Whether he has it that day or not, he's going to give you everything he has. And that's just his personality. And that's what's going to make him, you know, a major league pitcher.
That's AA manager Sergio Santos. Big thanks to Kevin Zipak and Brendan Riley, our producers here on White Sox Weekly. Don't go anywhere. White Sox and Tigers coming up in just a little bit. The pregame show is next on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.